We're continuing with Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, blessed is the omnipresent, blessed is he, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, blessed is the one who gave the Torah to Israel, blessed is he. This is a paraphrasing of the blessing on the Torah as we're about to learn Torah. Many Midrashim begin with this type of blessing, introducing the Torah that we're about to learn. And there's a song that goes with this. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu. Baruch Shenatan Torah. Shenatan Torah Le'amo Yisrael. Baruch Hu. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu. Baruch Shenatan Torah. Shenatan Torah Le'amo Yisrael. Baruch Hu. The Torah spoke corresponding to four children, meaning the Torah tells us in four different occasions that we have a mitzvah to tell our children about how we left Egypt, and our sages taught us that the reason the Torah says it four different times is to tell us that there are four types of children you should have, and the way you tell it over will correspond to each child, depending on what type of person he is. That's how you have to tell over the story. And the sages understood from the verses that the Torah was talking about these four types of children. Echad chacham ve'echad rasha. One is wise, one is wicked. One is simple, and one is unable to ask. How does a wise one phrase his questions? He asks in detail. He says, okay, what are the testimonies, decrees, ordinances that Hashem, our God, taught you? So you're going to tell him all the laws of the Pesach offering, and within that you're going to explain. Hashem told us that on the 15th, the day when the Egyptians believed that that was the day when their God was the most mighty, and that's why Pharaoh became more and more brazen as Nisan approached. I thought he realized he lost. Why did he become more brazen? Because Pharaoh realized, hey, it's my month coming. That's my God. The zodiac of the sheep goes high in the sky on the 15th. That's when I'm most powerful. They can't touch me. Then he believed it. And so Hashem said, on that day, you, my Jewish people, you're going to slaughter that sheep, which you used to pray. You used to pray to that sheep. You're going to slaughter it on that day. And not only that, you're not going to be embarrassed. You're going to take that sheep, take its blood, and put it on the doorpost on the outside of your house next to all the stars they could all see. I'm not scared. I don't believe in any of this garbage. I slaughtered the sheep today, and I'm not even going to hide it. You have a mitzvah on that day to take the sheep and roast it whole. You know how what a smell a roast makes? Ah, let all of Egypt smell to the roast of the Egyptian gods. Not at the hands of Hashem. This is your role, the Jewish people. This is your job. On the 15th, every year we do it again. We roast it. And that shows what might we had. Now, you're not allowed to unite just in case the Egyptians decide to make war, which they did the morning of Pesach. Not war against us. There was civil war. The firstborn said, why should we die tonight? Let them go. And the Egyptians said, no. And then there was a civil war. So now, we, the most natural thing for us to do would be to band up into units, at least to be able to protect ourselves. Says the Torah, every family stay in your own house. So you really have to have faith in God. But that's our mitzvah. So we're going to come and tell the firstborn, we're going to come and tell the wise son, these are the laws of the Paschal offering till today. We eat it with matzah to commemorate the redemption. We eat it roast. We don't break a bone. We show that today we're not as poor as we used to be. We don't have to break the bone to eat the marrow. And in Maftrina Chal Peschafik Oman, you tell them, but the Paschal offering is so important that the Torah wanted the aftertaste in your mouth at the end of the Seder to be from the Paschal offering. No going for dessert. Tonight we sit here, and that's the focus of tonight. The Yom Tov is called Pesach. Why is it called Pesach? Because when Hashem came to kill the firstborns in Egypt, the Egyptians used to worship their firstborns. Hashem came to kill the firstborns in Egypt, and our firstborns, well, they were also worshipped. So they were part of the gods of Egypt. And Hashem was killing the firstborns and destroying all the idols of Egypt. But Hashem came to our homes, and even though we didn't deserve it, because He loves us, He passed over our homes. And that's the Pesach offering. Passover, right. Rasha Ma'omer, what does the wicked son say? What's the whole point of this work that you guys are doing? And his point is, Lachem Velolo, he's saying, you, not me. This is an important point. When a person excommunicates himself, when a person excludes himself, he says, I don't believe in any of this. So kafar baikar, he is denying the basic principle of Judaism. And here's a very important point. People very often ask, where is God and how can I believe in him? And the answer is, he is within you and you're not believing something that's external to you. Meaning we have all kinds of external logical proofs, but they are merely roads that lead us back to ourselves. At the end of the day, Hashem made it so each person, just as he knows he exists, can recognize that Hashem exists. And in order for a person not to recognize Hashem, he has to be actively denying. Meaning, the nature of a human being is that he recognizes it. Before all the logical proofs, without all the logical proofs. The logical proofs are because you can't live a life based on something that you don't understand. But at the end of the day, when we speak about an apostate, we don't call him the philosopher, the intellectual, the atheist, the agnostic. No, we call him the denier. The word in Hebrew for a person is a kofel, one who denies. Because deep down inside, he also knows it's not right. There's a beautiful song by Shuli Rand about that. Serious?
No, it's just, and then you were just like, we're not going to sing it.
We're not going to sing it. I brought it for you guys in a different class. I played it for you, and I even personally sat down and wrote down all the words so you'd have it. That goes back a year or two ago. Or four.
That's why you didn't remember.
1,000 times Chaim Reich was here, because I took it from him.
Yeah, that was 2 years ago.
2 years ago? Okay. So, Vavata Kei Echinav. Hakei Echinav does not mean bash his teeth in. Hakei means dull them. Lakhot means to dull. Vemolo bavuza Hashem li betzitim imitzrayim. You tell him, yeah, that's why Hashem did it for me when I left Egypt. And you're alluding to him, liv lo lo. You left yourself out? You're right. You would have been left out. With that kind of attitude, you wouldn't have made it out of Egypt. Meaning, not everyone made it out of Egypt. Only 2 million out of 10 million. Meaning, 4 out of 5 Jews had bad attitudes and said, I don't want to leave. And you know what? They didn't leave. So you know what? With that kind of attitude, well, I guess you're right. It really, yeah. I don't know if you wouldn't have made it out.
Is this a formula you should answer every wise aleck Russia?
I would be very careful before I define someone as a Russia.
Okay. I'm saying if he is.
If he is a Russian, then sometimes the answer is to put him in his place. Yeah. No.
Why is this so?
You could have good coffers, right?
Well, first we have to understand whether the word Rasha precludes being good. Rasha is one who is evil with his relationship to his creator. Okay. He could be a kind person. Okay. But the Ra means evil to his fellow man. Rasha, even though in modern Hebrew we use the term Rasha to mean someone who is wicked, but technically in Talmudic terms, the word Rasha is a reference to how he behaves vis-a-vis his creator. Meaning, okay.
Why exactly is this kid called Rasha?
Because he has made a declaration that he's not a part of it. Meaning,
Wait,
give me just 1 second. That's a good point. What were we saying, Baruch?
What about Kal Shabbos person be a Russia?
That's a good question, which deserves a long answer, but not now.
Okay.
It's remind me, Bezat Hashem, on a Thursday night, next semester. Well, deal, Bezat Hashem.
This child is under the age of 12, right?
Why do you say that?
Children.
So we see that children is a reference to students, because children could be a person himself, the way he speaks to himself. And some commentaries say that the 4 children are really 4 parts of every person. And the question is, which one is going to dominate at any given time? Meaning we all have that little devil within us that's ready to be the Rasha. We all have that beautiful angel within us that's ready to be the Chacham. We all have the capacity to be so simple and just tell me what's doing. And we all have the capacity to be dumb, dimwit. I don't know. Gee, something strange here? Did you guys notice anything? Right? Okay. We and at different times, we choose different roles. You're going to see this in life. That there are times when you feel like being the dimwit. I don't know anything, but they call in Hebrew Rosh Katan.
Small head.
What it really means is, I'll do exactly what you told me.
Oh,
okay. And, I'm not willing.
Valuable trait.
100%. So these aren't four weaknesses in a person. They're four parts of a person. And a person has to know when to use each one. That's true. Even that one. It's a tool. You got to know when to use it. Okay. Now, Lemuel pointed out that this son, he came to the Seder. So we have to realize the double-edged sword in that. On the one hand, you're right. That shows we're having dialogue. So we want to keep the dialogue and we want to keep him there. On the other hand, he is... he has an attitude which is the problem. Meaning, if you want to discuss something, we can discuss it. If you want to have an attitude, so then it's very hard to discuss it. Chazal say, when a fool comes and attacks you, sometimes you have to answer him like him. And you're never going to win. Well, it depends on a person's attitude. I could tell you, it's a fine line and it takes a lot of thought when this is the right approach. But sometimes it is. Sometimes you have to say it that way. And I could tell you, even at different ages, this could be the right answer. I'll give you an example. This is a crude example. It's not accurate because I don't think the child is being wicked, but he is showing an attitude. A child comes to his parent and says, "You're not giving me another helping of dessert. Forget it," and takes his yarmulke and throws it to the floor. "I'm not benching." So you understand it depends if this is at age 15 or at age 3. But let's say that this happens at a... And the answer, I think, at many ages might be the same answer. I'll give you an example. At one point, one of the kids got really upset at me. And they turn around and pull down their clothing. Now, they didn't mean to, like, to show me anything. They were like a form of protest. You're not giving me what I want. They pulled down their clothing. So what do you react in such a situation? So I did what he just did. I laughed, and I said, "I thought you were," whatever age it was, 5 or 7. "Now I see you're much younger than I thought you were. This is behavior I'd expect from a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old. Aren't you embarrassed to do that? Aren't you too old for that?" And I went on my way and left them there with their clothing off. I said, "If you feel comfortable like that, stay like that. But it's a little funny. At your age, you should do that." And I walked away. Conversation over. So the kid is like, "What am I supposed to do now? If I bring him back up, then I give in. If I don't bring him back up, then I'm a little kid." So they pulled him back up and said, "I'm not a little kid." Okay, so you see? Okay. Same thing with the throwing down the yarmulke and "I'm not going to bench." So my answer to that, at most ages, is don't bench. You're 100% right. You go to bed now knowing that you didn't bench. You're going to go to bed and know that your little neshama is going to go up to Shemayim and talk to their Baal Shem and say, "I didn't bench." Now you leave the table, don't you dare bench. Go to bed right now without benching. And it's your problem, it's not my problem. You're going to be in Shemayim when you fall asleep. And you're going to have to answer up for your not benching, not me. Goodbye, no more benching. No, you're right, you're not benching, you're 100% right. Go, goodbye. Suddenly the kid is, "I want to bench, really, Let me just..." What are we doing when we tell the Rasha, "You wouldn't have left Mitzrayim"? What we're telling him is, you have to understand something. It's your attitude. It's your life. But with this attitude, you have to realize where you're headed. You want to go down that route? I can't stop you. It's a free world. It's your choice. But you have to realize what you just said. What you just said is, "I'm not a part of this." You're not a part of this? And this is a big attitude question that a person has whenever he approaches Torah. Very often a person could hear something and say, "That's stupid." Well, you know what? That's stupid. You want to hear something and say, "I don't understand it." You want to hear something and say, "It really doesn't make sense to me." Well, you might be right. But to say that's stupid, what you've done is said, "I'm right and that's wrong. I know and they don't know." Well, let's have a little bit of respect for a religion that's been around 3 millennia. Let's, give it a little bit of time to discover what it really has to say. And that's that. What we're really telling the wicked son is, why are you taking the stance? I'm out of it. You could take that stance. It's your life, but you should realize where it's led people before you. And that's where you're standing right now once you've taken that stance. So I don't see it as a finite answer. Quite the contrary, I see it as a way of bringing him back into the Seder.
That's a very surprising answer.
Why?
No, it just doesn't read like that.
Well, I'm telling you, it's like my telling my son, you're right, you're not benching.
I know.
And you will have to pay the price for you're not benching. It's like, let's play this out in today's day and age. A kid walks in and says, what you guys doing here with all this funny food and not having a meal and just sitting and reading the Haggadah tonight? Why are you guys doing that? And I tell the kid, you're right. We guys are doing that. You can have supper. I will prepare you matzah with butter. I'll prepare you all the food you want and go have a good night. What did I just tell him? You decided you're not a part of this? No problem. You're not a part of this. So you're not a part of this. No problem. I will make you a delicious supper and go have a good night. Goodbye. What does the kid on the mic say? Wait a second, but I wanted to be a part of it. I was just thinking, you know, I didn't mean it that way or whatever. If you're going to try to go head on and be defensive, you lost. When a kid comes in and says, this is stupid and I don't know why you guys are doing it, the best reaction you could give him is, you're right. No problem. You're not a part of it. I'll give you whatever you want. You want the matzah, you want the meat, whatever you want, you can have it. Have a good night. Goodbye.
What if he continues in that?
Look, it depends on. Now you're asking a chinuch question, so
this is a
chinuch. Right? Okay. So I'll tell you what we had. We had this with both the boys, that they reached a point where they didn't want to wear tzitzis. Okay, it's annoying. Usually, it's because it itches them, and it's a pain for a little boy to go to the bathroom with these little strings hanging all over. And it's hot in the summer, and it's annoying to them. So we tried the first route. You don't want to? Okay, we'll leave it for the big boys. But then he did what you just said. Fine, good, goodbye and good riddance. I don't want the tzitzis. So then we went a different route. We went and bought a book on tzitzit, which has pictures, and it has the little pieces of the wool, and it shows you the whole procedure of how... And we made it into something very special. Meaning, when that route didn't work, and this isn't the kid who has an attitude, the kid has legitimate reasons why it's annoying to him. So then we came to show him what's special about it. Meaning, we tried route one, and then we paused, and we said, hey, this isn't working, this is wrong. He's not anti, he's just, you know, it's annoying to him. Okay, so let's show him what's nice about it. So we did a rewind, went back, and suddenly, only on Shabbos. They'd only get to read that book on Shabbos, and then it became something special and slowly. Another thing, kids don't want to come to shul on Shabbos. So they're right. They're 100% right. If they don't know how to daven, it means nothing to them. So for them, it's torture to sit for 2 hours and not be able to do anything. What are you doing to the kid? So you get books that are interesting, and you take them to the davening that's really short with a lot of singing, and you get a candy man. The shuls I go to don't have candy men. So I became the candy man, but not for my kids. I'd bring a candy and go over to someone else. I guess by the time my kids hear this, it'll be okay for them to hear. Michael Arosh and I had a deal that he'd slip by me and I'd slip him the candy, and then he'd come by a few minutes later and he'd tell the kid, ooh, you're davening so nicely, what a big boy, you came to shul on Shabbos, and he'd give him a candy. After a few weeks, Michael Arosh decided he liked the job and he started buying the candies. But okay, fine. Till this day, he's the candy man? Okay, so I got him started on it. So I'm not saying this is the optimal formula. There are times when this doesn't work. You're right. It won't always work. But on the other hand, trying to be apologetic and let me show you how nice it is and how sweet it is, that's not going to work either when you have this attitude. You have to find a way to nip the attitude. Sometimes the way to nip the attitude is to go with him. Well, husband, there was a couple that had the question, what do we do when our boy comes home one day and says, Dad, I want to go get earrings? So I always say that in such a scenario, the parents have to discuss how did we get here and how do we get out of here. This happened. What?
It's a bit late to discover the problem when you get to there, isn't it?
No, it's never late. And I insisted to the father that he has to tell him, I'll go with you to get the earrings. But let's first do a little bit of research. You know, let's find out what are the dangers and how annoying it is, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we'll do it together. Let's find a good place. I'll find nice earrings. And 100%. Just 3-4 months ago, I sat with a parent. He used to be a Rosh Yeshiva. Today, he gives a shir in a few places, and his son basically went down that route. And I told him, look, you know, you're a top educator, so who am I to tell you? But this is the path I think you have to take.
Whatever you do, if you do that, I'll kick you out of the house, and I said...
That's not going to work in today's day and age. That's not. We're not in the generation for that. Today, a kid says goodbye. My friends will put me up. And it's been that way for half a century already. I know there's an old person who I'm very fond of who told me openly that all his kids' friends knew that if their parents kicked them out of the house, they could come to him. So I always wondered, why is he boasting? You know, today it's 50 years later. He's already in his 80s or 90s. But he still brags that even his kids' friends knew that. And I always think, that's so uneducational, you know. Mm-hmm. So the kids, so the parents, what does that mean? Okay, so I don't know the kids' friends and their parents. Maybe the parents were whacked. I don't know, you know. Maybe his house was a refuge, whatever. I don't know.
Maybe not that punishment. Maybe some alternative punishment.
It depends at what age. I'm talking about a kid who's 18. I'm talking about a 16, 17, 18 year old. You have to think. Right, the question is that the way to go, or should you work with the kid? Meaning, if it's a power struggle, the kids are usually more powerful than the parents. If you're going to try to overpower him, you have the money, and I'm not going to let you do it. So he'll say, fine. And before you know it, he'll take a job selling drugs and he'll have more money than you will. Now what? And it doesn't take too much brains to do that.
Tell the kid that if he's going to I'm going to wear the earring too. I said, well, it's your choice. If you get one, I get one. That killed it right there.
Yeah, what are you going to do when he says he wants a tattoo?
Yeah.
Tama Omer. Okay. So part of what we're trying to do tonight is connect to the kids. And if we connect correctly, and if the Yamim Tovim are a time of warmth and happiness, then Bezrat Hashem, we shouldn't have to reach those points. Tama Omer. What does the simple son say? Mazot, what's going on? And guys, you have to love and have patience for each kid. I was sitting Purim and talking to the kids, and I said, so Haman was, and one of the kids goes, the tzaddik. Right, almost. So, I'm thinking, okay? Okay? We have a responsibility to love every kid, wherever they are, whatever they understand. Notice that the Haggadah tells you, Echad, 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 Echad. Echad Chacham, Echad Rasha, Echad Tam, Echad Sheino Yodea Lishol. Why does it say Echad, Echad? To tell you they're each number one. We have a rule in Tanaic quotes. Usually there's an ordering. When I want to tell you they're all of equal importance, then I say 1, 1, 1 to tell you they're all number one. I couldn't fit them all in as number one, so that's why I say echad, echad, echad. It's not that one is more spectacular than the other. Tama Omer, so what does the simple son say? What's going on? So you tell him, because igadot yano Hashem imtzayim ibet avadim. And I like to say it in their terms. So when I have a two-year-old, my two-year-old daughter this year will hear, Tzipora, there was a bad man. You heard of him? His name was Paro. He was really bad. And he hit me. And he made me cry. And then Hashem took me out. Isn't that happy? Good. Happy Pesach. That's it. End of story. Okay? That's what you can understand. Finished. Two-year-old. That's my Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay? She doesn't. I go talk to her about 100 years, 1,000 years. She has no clue. You're going to get into more details? You got nowhere. You got to talk on her level. Then you have people who don't even know what to ask. We've had people at our seders who... that was the first time they were at any meal. Forget Shabbos or Yom Tov. So they think every Shabbos we eat matzah. Like, they don't even know what to ask. What's unusual here? What does your meals usually look like? At tachlo. So you have to initiate the conversation. You have to tell him. Find an interesting way to tell him. Now, you have to understand there's a big difficulty here. People get bogged down on this part of the Seder. This is the instructions. That's like a guy who buys himself an iPod. And he spends his life reading the instructions about how to use it. You don't do that. What we're reading here is instructions. How do you do telling over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Well, the Gada is telling you this is how you do it. But if you're going to only read that Gada and read the instructions and that's where it ends, you didn't do it. You're still reading about your iPod.
Could you compare that to someone who studies Torah all day long and never actually goes out of bed injured?
Good question. Thursday night next semester. So don't forget that learning Torah is a mitzvah. Here this is a mitzvah too, but I mean you miss the point if you don't go and start telling them the midrashim and the stories. Again, more instructions. Yachal Rosh Chodesh. Maybe you should start telling them on Rosh Chodesh. Talmud Lomar B'Yom Ahu. That's why the Torah says, no, on this day, on the anniversary. Torah says, I want you to have hands-on education. Show me. This matzah, this is what we ate. Maror, you see how bitter it is? This is how bitter our lives. Okay, so this isn't so bitter, but it's pretty tasteless and bland. That's the idea. You tell them. And now you start the story. This is where the story begins. Now, the story begins 8 years ago, 9 years ago, on Chol HaMoed Sukkos. I was walking with my wife, and we were newlyweds. We're in Mea Shearim. And a huge guy walks over to us. All the stores are closed. The streets are pretty desolate. And this huge guy comes over with a Russian accent and says, can I ask you a question? And he has this deep voice and he has a really sad look in his eyes. And I said to my wife, why don't you just go over there a little bit? So I say, yes. And he says to me, can a person come back? So I said, where to? So he said, is God willing to accept a person back? So I said to my wife, he's going to ask us for money. This is just an opener. You go into that there, I'm going to talk to him. So I said to him, yeah, person can always come back. So he says, prove it. And we started having a long philosophical conversation, which lasted about a half hour. At the end of which, he said, where can I learn more about Judaism and the idea that a person can always do tshuva? And since then, he's been enrolled in Eishet Torah or Sameach, I don't know exactly where. What's my point? One of the messages we have here in the Agada, and this is one of the themes that run through the Agada, is the idea of matchil bignut umseyem b'shevach. We start with our shameful past. And our point is, we did not start out life at the Seder table. We started out life being pagans. And as I say to my children at the Seder, you know what that means? Oh, bottle, save me. Oh, boy, I need it. Do me a favor. I want my children to be healthy. And my wife to love me. And I want to have good crops this summer. Please make it rain. Please. I take a bottle and I tell the kids, you know what that means? Oh, what a bottle. Please. He'll take care of me. I'm going to be okay. And now, not that you understand what that means. That's what our grandparents did. They take a little bottle and took it. When they needed something, they prayed it. When someone, that's our grandparents. That's not Abbott and Costello. Our grandparents, mitchila uvdei avodah zarah ayu avotenu, our forefathers. What?
That's permitted, by the way.
Yeah.
Ve'achshav.
I'm not. They know I don't mean it seriously. And then I turn to them and I say, tell me, Yosef, does it make sense to talk to a bottle? Do you really think the bottle is going to help you, Yosef? Because I'll pour you a drink if you really think the bottle will do something for you. So we understand, but what we also have to understand is that our forefathers believed in this. We didn't start out like this. And how did we get here? Hashem brought us close. Meaning Hashem invited us to take the step forward, and we didn't take it. We remained pagans. In Egypt, we remained pagans. And then Hashem appeared on the scene and said, I'm not going to leave you in that state. I'm going to take a step towards you. Kirivanu amakom la'avodato. Hashem brought us close to His service. Shenemar, as it says, v'yom yosho kolam kom Hashem l'kaisre bevrana yosho al'terem olam. Joshua says to the nation, this is what Hashem says, your forefathers lived on the other side of the Euphrates. Terach avi Avraham avi Nachor. They have durim achirin. They worshipped all kinds of gods. There's lightning. Oy vey. Zeus must be upset. Someone's committing adultery with one of his many wives. Look at how many schleifing Zeus is doing. Let's go quickly sacrifice something so he doesn't get upset at us too. Ah, that's what they believed in. You read Homer, Iliad, Odyssey, don't waste your time. But, okay, that's what they did. Terach. I took your forefather Abraham from that side of the Euphrates. I took him throughout the land of Canaan. I gave him a lot of seed, but I also gave him the special one, Yitzchak. And I gave Isaac, Yaakov, and Esav. And here we are subtly telling the child, I want you to understand, we're not the only people on the planet. There are still pagans out there. There are still all kinds of people out there, and they all want us dead. It's an interesting world we live in. What's unique about us? That Hashem took Avram and brought him close. That Hashem said, I want you, and I want you to be a sign for the nations. And people challenge us on this. So to the Muslim challenge, we say, yeah, Avram had a lot of children, but the Torah says, Ki v'Yitzchak ikarei lechazara. There were all the children, and Yitzchak. That's what we just said. And Hashem says Yitzchak is special. And then we come to the Seder night. Because we have to contend with the Edomites. We have to contend with people who say they're the real Jews. And if you look at a dollar bill also has a mugging David. It also says in God we trust. And a dollar bill, well, the Puritans wanted the legal language in the United States of America to be Hebrew. Because they called themselves Jews. Because they thought they were the chosen people. So for centuries now, we've been contending with the descendants of Esau who say, we're also Jews. Not we're also, we're the Jews. And the answer to them is the Seder night. Because when Hashem told Avram, I have chosen you, Hashem said, your seed will be in Egypt for 400 years. And none of them can claim that they were in Egypt for 400 years. Meaning when we say, look at what we're doing at the Seder tonight, part of what we're telling the child is we are the chosen people. And the proof of it is that we fulfilled that prophecy where God said to Avram, I will give you the land of Canaan, but only after your children will spend 400 years being enslaved. You see what we're doing tonight? What we're doing tonight, we've been doing ever since we left Egypt. My father told me that his father told him that his father told him, going all the way back to Egypt, this is the way it's been. Every year at this night we sit here, and this is our answer to all the Esavs in the world, and that's what we just said. Esav got Mount Seir, but we went down to Egypt. And the fact that we went down to Egypt and we're doing the Seder night is one of the pivotal proofs to Judaism and to Judaism's rights to the land of Israel. Yes, Larry?
Were you saying that the Jews in Egypt were pagans, or even before Abraham started?
Both.